onto this evening, continuing many respects from the last share that we had on Nisuin, which was the questions to do with the Ketubah. We dealt last time with the main fundamentals of the Ketubah, question whether it was Doraita, Darabanan, how much the Ketubah was worth, whether we were talking about Mount Tzuri or Mount Medina, etc., etc. And now I want to discuss some of the details associated with the Ketubah. Some of it is Lomda, some of it is practical halacha, some of it is practical rabbinics. So I want to start off with a big question which comes up, and that's the question of the dating of the Ketubah. We know that the Ketubah has to be dated, and that's because it's a monetary shtar, and there are important applications, because once the chatan, the husband, has been mitchayev with the money, so then if he sells any of his real estate, then that's meshubad to the Ketubah, meaning that if the marriage comes to an end, so then he's if he hasn't got the £1,000 or £10,000 or whatever it is he's committed himself to, but he sold real estate that he had at the time when he when the Ketubah was executed, so then the wife can go and claim that money from whoever's bought the field. The field is meshubad to the Ketubah. So we need to know when this shibud occurred, when this hitchayvut kicked in. So the date is very important. And we have a principle with shtarot that a shtar mukdam is pasul, meaning if on the 10th of January I'm mitchayev a certain amount of money to a person. So Plony gets married on the 10th of January, and the Ketubah is written on the 10th of January. So anything that he sells after the 10th of January is meshubah to the Ketubah, and the wife can claim any money from what's been sold. Now, what if he wrote in the Ketubah, instead of writing the 10th of January, it wrote the 1st of January? So the 1st of January, that would mean that he sold a field on the 5th of January. The wife hasn't really got any rights to that field. But because the Ketubah says the 1st of January, so then the documentary evidence is that in actual fact the wife has got rights to that field. So that's a big problem. So we would never want to predate a Ketubah. It's obviously less of a problem if it's post-dated. Post-dated is just wrong, but it's not pasul. We'd never want to predate a Ketubah, and of course this is always one of the things that you have to check when you're being Masadei Kiddushin, that the dating on the Ketubah is right. Sometimes, you know, small mistakes can crop up. The wedding's taking place on a Sunday, and you know, you sit down on the Sunday morning, start filling in the Ketubah, and you just look at the wrong date on the calendar, the wrong line in the luach, and you put the wrong date down. So that can happen. Particularly it can happen, you've got a wedding, say, in the winter on a Sunday evening, 5 o'clock on a Sunday evening, and you're writing the Ketubah in the day, you're filling it in, you're not signing it then, but you're filling it in Sunday morning, you know, when you've got a bit of time, and you look at the luach and it says it's Yud Dalad Lachodesh, so you write the 14th, and then the evening, of course, is the 15th. So mistakes like that can crop in, or just sometimes other big mistakes can crop in. I've seen Ketubah where instead of saying Taf Shin Ayin, it just said Shin Ayin. It didn't say Taf Shin. It instead of saying Chameshet Alafim or Shvameot, it missed out the Chameshet Alafim, and it just said Shvameot, or it said Chameshet Alafim V'shivim u'shtayim. It missed out the 700. So those sorts of things can crop up, and they will obviously make the ketubah pasul and invalid. But the case that I want to discuss particularly this evening is a very frequent occurrence which can come up, and this is where you have a wedding that's taking place just after either Beit HaShemashot or early in the evening. And certainly it can happen, let's say, you know, it's a winter chuppah, and the chuppah, say, is scheduled a Sunday afternoon in good Anglo-Jewish tradition, so Sunday afternoon, 3:30. And Shkia is at, say, 10 past 4. So you've really got lots of time there. It's not a problem to have a chuppah at 3:30. You know, you've got 40 minutes there. It's, you know, you're really doing well. But something goes wrong, and the grandmother of the kala doesn't show up till quarter past four. And you've signed the ketubah and everything, and, you know, you're itching to get started, and 4 o'clock comes, and you're telling the family, we've got to start. And they won't start without the grandmother being there. And now the wedding is taking place on the 15th of Lachodesh. So now we've got a question, is the ketubah going to be valid or not? It's not quite as bad as a ketubah that says, you know, the wedding took place in Tevet and it actually took place in Shvat, or even just a difference of a few days. But the problem is here is that the date on the ketubah is not the same as the date of the wedding. Now, one might well say that actually that doesn't really matter, because when was the Chatan Mitchayev, and when did the Kabbalat Kinyan take place? The Kabbalat Kinyan is the Chatan being Mitchayev and committing himself to the payments of the Ketubah. He was Mitchayev on the 14th. That's when he did the Kabbalat Kinyan. That's when they signed the Ketubah. So maybe this isn't really regarded as a Shtar Mukdam, because this is what, you know, Shtar Mukdam is where the Shtar was written 2 weeks before anything happened, and then 2 weeks later the Chatan comes along and is mitchayev himself by the Kabbalat Kinyan. But here, the date on which appears on the Ketubah is the date on which the Kabbalat Kinyan took place. So Lichara, he is being mitchayev himself from the 14th, even though he wasn't Mekadesh Le'isha until the 15th. So this is a point, predictably, a point of machloket amongst the poskim. And it's particularly interesting that it's, again, it's poske zmanenu, you know, the achronim, you know, the last generation of achronim who discuss this. Don't know what that means, you know, did they never come across this in previous generations? Did they have the answer to it? I don't know. These are always questions that come up when you have things which aren't discussed by so much by earlier poskim. In any event, we have, for starters, and this should be on page 2 of the Dapei Mekorot that you got last time. We have a tshuva of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, which was first published in Kovetz Beit Aron Yisrael, subsequently actually appeared in the Minchat Shlomo. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach has an interesting take on this. Because he's not particularly worried about it being a shtar mukdam, but what he's worried about is that it's sheker. Why is it sheker? Because what appears in the ketubah? In the ketubah, we find that it says that the husband said to his wife, "Havi lina intu. You should be my wife." They give testimony. They say, the ketubah begins. Eich ploni ben almoni, amal alahada betulta plonit bat almoni, haveli lin tukadat Moshe Yisrael, va'ana eflach va'okiv ha'ezon, etc., etc. So they're giving testimony that on the 14th of Tevet, this is what the Chatan said, and he never said it until the 15th of Tevet. So it's a problematic, not because of Shtar Mukdam, but it's problematic because there's sheker there. One never wants to put sheker in a shtar. If you've got sheker in the shtar, that's obviously going to raise questions about the whole integrity of the shtar. So that's and if you just look at the final lines, he says, "Imkein harif adai asul lasop lachtomar sheker ki ein zerat mechzik shikra ela sheker mamash." It seems like sheker. It really is. This is sheker gamur. So it's, if you like, it's on a technical point that Rav Shlomo Zalman raises problems here. So that's the first shita. The second shita is a shita of Rav Moshe Feinstein in Igrot Moshe Ben Ha'ezer Chelik Dalad Simon Kuf. And Rav Moshe, we'll just look through the first lines inside, and then we'll talk more about it. So Rav Moshe refers to a passage in Dibrot Moshe, that's his Chidushim on Shas, in Bava Metzia. It's for hard to pay Rashi B'Tosfot Bava Metzia Daf Zainam Ubet Dibrot HaMakal Bizman. Al Hada Katvu Ulekodem Erusin Leika Lemechash Dekatavla. So the Tosfot there in Masechet Bava Metzia is talking about a case where the Ketubah was written, or there's a concern that the Ketubah was written before the Nisuin. Right? Remember in the times of Chazal, you had the Erusin and then you had the Nisuin. And the concern there is that the Ketubah was written before the Nisuin. So there's a whole question there whether it's going to be valid or not. But the Tosfot discusses why is it that we don't worry that it was maybe written even before the Erusin or before the Kiddushin, which is even earlier. And the explanation, or what Rav Moshe understands from this, from the answer, Tosfot says, we don't need to worry about that because nobody does that. So Rav Moshe understands from that nobody does that because you can't do that. It would be invalid to have the Ketubah written before the Kiddushin. And therefore, he learns from this that, you know, if you've got the, you know, if it was written on the day before the Kiddushin took place, then it's going to be intrinsically pasul. That is the definition of a pasul ketubah. So that's the sheet of Rav Moshe, that there's no way that you can do this. However, Rav Osher Weiss in Minchat Asher Chelek Bet has five tshuvot on the subject, which more or less all say the same thing, in slightly different ways and at different lengths and a bit more longer, and he deals with in depth with Rav Moshe's understanding of the Tosfot and with the Rav Shlomo Zalman. But the essential point that Rav Osher Weiss makes is that Rav Shlomo Zalman's worried about sheker. He says it's always sheker if you're worried about what Rav Shlomo Zalman says, because always on the Ketubah is always signed and executed before the Chuppah. I say except when it isn't. We'll talk about that momentarily. But normatively, it's signed before the Chuppah takes place. So the Chatan hasn't yet said Havili Le'imtu. So whether it's, you know, halachically the day before or not halachically the day before, it's always said, so the Ketubah is always signed before they've actually said this. So he says that having an interlude in the Ketubah is not testimony about what the Chatan has said, but rather it's contextualizing the Hitchaivut. It's telling us what, you know, why he's made this Hitchaivut. He's made this Hitchaivut because he's getting married. He hasn't just made a financial commitment to a certain woman, but rather it's telling us that he's made this, he's doing this because he's saying to her, Havili Le'imtu, I want you to marry me. And Rav Osher Weiss says that, you know, this is, you know, happens all the time at weddings in Yerushalayim, he says, that The Ketubah's dealt with before Shkia, and the Chuppah takes place after Shkia, and they're asukim ba'oto inyan throughout. It's not like, you know, they go off to a football match for a few hours and then come back to have the Chuppah. So he's really not worried about this at all. Yeah. No, it's definitely not Shtar Mukdam. It's not Shtar Mukdam at all, because it's the date is on the same day when the Hitchayvut was made. So it's not a Shtar Mukdam. Right. So Rav Moshe doesn't seem to be so concerned that it's actually that it really is a Shtar Mukdam. He's more concerned that it was going to seem that it's a Shtar Mukdam. And really, you need to go through. You haven't got time now to go through the whole Londis in Rav Moshe and the whole rebuttal of Rav Osher Weiss. So I'm just summing up what the Shitot are there. But Rav Osher Weiss fundamentally rejects Rav Moshe's understanding of the Tosfot. Rav Moshe's understanding of the Tosfot is essentially that Tosfot is saying you don't need to worry that it's that the Ketubah was written before the Erusin, because you're not allowed to do that. Whereas Rav Osher Weiss's understanding is no. Tosfot is saying you don't need to worry that it's written before the Erusin because people don't do that, but not because they're not allowed to do that. That's the bottom line of what they're arguing about. Rav Bleich, in tradition and contemporary halachic problems, he addresses this question as well. He says, he's referring to other people who've addressed the question. He says they haven't discussed the propriety of drawing up the Ketubah prior to sunset, but post-dating it to bear the date of the following day. That's the third option that you've got. You know, another option that you've got is that you're doing it, you know, you're signing the Ketubah before Shkia, but today's the 14th, but you know what, you'll put the next day's date on the Chuppah's going to take place on the 15th, so at worst it's a Shtar Me'uchar. That shouldn't be problematic. So he says, although a valid instrument may be executed in this manner, the Rama rules that one should avoid postdating a promissory note because of the appearance of falsity. Yet the very text of the Ketubah incorporates the declaration of the groom, be thou my wife according to the law of Moses in Israel, and recalls that the bride consented and became his wife, events which are anticipated but which in fact have not yet as yet not occurred. Presumably this practice is not deemed to be tainted with the appearance of falsity, seeing as it is commonly understood that such clauses are included in anticipation of the event, and that halachically assumption of the obligations of the Ketubah is contingent on those events actually taking place. By the same token, since the events are recorded in the past tense, it would fear that there's no appearance of falsity in utilising the date on which these events will actually occur. It would be immediately understood that a later date was utilised, since the events described as yet not occurred will indeed have occurred, and hence be accurately described as past events as of the date recorded in the document. So Rav Bleich is of the opinion that in that situation a good thing to do would be to put the next day's date on the Ketubah. Rav Osher Weiss is perfectly happy with putting the previous day's date on the Ketubah, and Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Moshe are not happy about it. Rav Shlomo Zalman isn't happy about it, would regard it as a valid Ketubah, whereas Rav Moshe would hold that it's not even a valid Ketubah. Okay, so that was the first area that I wanted to discuss. Yes. Yeah. No. Why would we be so worried about the Yichud being before the Shkia? I don't see why we would be. I mean, the main concern of Rav Shlomo Zalman is a concern of, you know, when did he say Javi Lila Intu? And you said Javi Lila Intu on the date, which is on the Ketubah. And I'm just thinking it through. It's going to be that the Hitchayvut was on the date on the Ketubah. So even if we say that it's the Yichud, which is Kona, Chuppah is Kona, and that the Chuppah is the Yichud, I don't see why it should be a problem, because all it's saying is that it might be, this is the question, you know, that they discuss, that the, even if the whole thing's done the day before, then what it means is that it won't, it will be valid from the date on the Ketubah, but only once the wedding has taken place. I wouldn't be so concerned, especially as, we've discussed before that the Sfardim don't have the Yichud till much later. The Yichud, you know, the Chatchila can be on another day. You know, if you have a wedding in the afternoon, the Yichud will be that night. So I'm not sure that I would be so concerned about it at all. Okay, let's go on to our next question. Next question is a big question. I think we touched on it briefly last time, but this is the question of what to write in the Ketubah when the Kala is not a Betula. The standard Ketubah Matayim, is for a Betula. Now, in some cases, a woman's divorced or widowed, so there's no question who came to write that she's an Almana or that she's a Grusha. That's there's no question there, and there's no shame or embarrassment in the fact that she's not a Betula. She's got seven kids and she's been married before, so there's nothing to discuss. But in many instances, the Kala's not a Betula, but it's not necessarily something that you want to publicise so widely. It's interesting that, you know, we tend to think of this as being a 20th century or 21st century problem. But the Chatam Sofer discusses it. We're going to see here a tshuva of Rav David Tzvi Hoffman in the 19th century discussing it. Human nature is human nature, and it might be the norm in non-Orthodox circles now, but it certainly wasn't a total rarity in days of yore. So Rav David Tzvi Hoffman in Melamed L'Hoyel Chelek Gimel, Sim Kaf Gimel, asks, Mishen Osei Be'ulat Atzmo, Eich Yishich Tov B'chtuva. So here we're talking about Be'ulat Atzmo. Okay, this is a couple that have been maybe living together, or even if they haven't been living together, they've been intimate. Vatai nichtof betulta. So he says you definitely can't write betulta. The gam beulta nichtof mipnei agnai. But you don't want to write beulta either. Some of the poskim say, yeah, write beulta. That's what she is. But he says that's not such a nice thing to write. Ve'eshad tachat moha betulaichi tov nichtof ketubateich. So he says, okay, so, you know, skip out that bit at all. You know, moha betulaichi, you don't need to deal with that, you know, in terms of the beginning. You've got the text of the Ketubah there on the fifth page. So Eich Rebbe Ploni Ben Almoni, Amala Lahada, Sarah Bat Rivka, but Avraham, whatever. You know, you don't need to say what her status is. Havi Lila Intu, and then the Ahivna Leichi, Mohar Ketubataichi, Kesef Zuzi Matan. Okay, just don't say anything about it being Mohar Betulaichi, but just say the Ahivna Leichi Ketubataich, Zuzi Matan. I'll give you your Ketubah, 200 Zuz there. Says that's the best way to to deal with it, you know, as it were, gloss over it. You can't say that it's more betulaichi because she isn't, but just write ketubatai. Omnam kevan da Rambam katzav to kotev la ketubah kishar betulot v'chein pirei shator. However, the Rambam holds that bulat atzmo gets a regular ketubah, i.e. that she gets matayim, v'afal gav sheish cholkin aleihem, mikol makom, tov lifsot gabi nara ka rambam, v'lichtov kesef suzim matan, d'chazilichim midoraita. So we can, as far as the Nara is concerned, we can follow the Rambam. But he says, look at what Rabbi Akiva Ega holds. She katzav gabi bogeret. Harambam modede inu chayav elamane. But if she's a bogeret, which will always be the case in our weddings, so then even the Rambam agrees she's only it's only a mane. In any event, the important thing we're seeing from Rav David Tzvi Hoffman is that he seems to be of the opinion, number one, you can't call her a betulta if she isn't, and number two, you can't write that it's more betulaichi, and number three, that if it's a bogeret, then she's actually not entitled to keshev suzei matan, de chazulichi midoraita. So you're really going to have to change things around, and you'd have to have skip out the word betulta at the beginning. You'd have to say v'yahivna lach ketubatayich kesef zuzei matan dechazu lechi, and you won't say that it's midoraita. You certainly couldn't say it's midoraita, and you can always be mitchayev more money. So, you know, you can say you want to give 200, even though, min hadin, you're only going to be chayav for 100. So that's the shita of Rav David Tzvi Hoffman. Let's look at Rav Moshe. Igrot Moshe, Orchaim Chelet Dantim Kuf Yudchet. So he's of the opinion that, he's asked about a question where the Chatan knows that the Kala is not a Betula. And the question is, do they have to tell the Masade Kiddushin so that everything can be rearranged and the Ketubah can be written appropriately? So Rav Moshe is not bothered. He says, B'dva ketivat ha-ketubah, in tzarech lagid the Masade Kiddushin, ki ma'achar she-chatan yachtom al ha-ketubah, harei iskim lichtuvat betula, v'shuv lekin kepeida mu'chiyah b'chtuvat betula, af im be'emet enu betula im lo hita toto. So long as the Chatan knows that he's voluntarily committing himself to this Ketubah and that he's not having the wool pulled over his eyes, so then it's fine. He knows he only has to give her 100, but he wants to give her 200, then that's fine. And if it's betulat atzmo, so then he says you can even write betulta. V'atam avua b'tshuvotai b'igrot Moshe, v'yasefer asar Rav Ahu, ach gam b'v'ula ma'acharim nivala m'Yisrael kasheh shikshere l'kuhuna she'inul gel inyan iso, ela inyan sacha mamon, im ha'chatan yodeh rotze b'ktuvat betula, v'cholim l'chtov k'tuvat betula. He says, so long as it's not going to cause any halachic difficulties writing betula, then you can write that. He's not worried. About, you know, there's a degree of sheker there in terms of the fact that, you know, the woman isn't a betulta, but you're writing betulta. He's not bothered by that. Just one minute. He's not bothered by that. What his concern is that a ketubah can be used to determine whether a woman is Kishera Likahuna. Now, generally speaking, a woman wants to get remarried. Okay, she's a widow. A woman is a widow. If she's a grusha, then obviously she can't marry a kohen. Okay, she's a widow though. She's a widow, and she wants to marry a kohen. So they'll look at her. They'll look at her ketubah, and they'll see if it's ketubah. If it says that she's a betula, and she got matayim. So then they'll know that she's Kishera Likahuna, because she wasn't. What would make her not Kishera Likahuna? We've learnt this previously. If she was Be'ula Lenochri, if she'd had been intimate with a Gentile, then she can't marry a Kohen. She's got the Din of Azona. However, so if the Ketubah says Betula Matayim, so then we assume that she can marry a Kohen. Now, if she's a Be'ula, but she was a Be'ula, either Be'ula Tatzmo Upu'ula to another Jewish man. So she's still Kasheira LeKahuna, so it doesn't matter what's written on the Ketubah. The only problem would be if she's been Ba'ula to a non-Jew previously. Then she can't marry a Kohen. And we need to flag that up somehow in the Ketubah. So a way of flagging it up in the Ketubah will be to say that she's only getting Ketubat Maneh. She's only getting Maneh. That would be the way to do it, and not to write Betulta, because there are important implications which would be problematic if it said Betula. So that's what Rav Moshe says. Glenn, you had a question. Okay, let's see. There's also a tshuva of Rav Nachum Rabinovich on the subject, and we'll just look at his conclusion. But he says, "Bachor v'tulash in ishtadchu v'kavuz man het chaten k'dat Moshe Yisrael ulam lifnei hamod hamyuad nishamu be'er ka'ot v'dari yachad." Happens not infrequently. You've got a couple; they're getting married, and they've had a civil marriage already. Yesh lichtof b'ketuvatam ma'atayim. So he says you can. There's no problem with writing ma'atayim in the Ketubah. Afa ein lahazkir betul tada. You can't write betul tada, ela itadada or plonit da. Yesh lichtof mohad chazu lechi b'li betula. Just say mohad chazu lechi. Or Ketubah Teich Ma'atayim Dechazu Lechi, as the Melamed Lahoel said. By the way, Nanu Kotvin Midoraita B'chol Mikra, he says that they don't write Midoraita. Anyhow, we discussed that previously. Some places do, some places don't. Ashkenazim and Chutz La'aretz generally do write Midoraita. So, again, Rav Nachum is worried about the Hitchaivut of Ma'atayim, but he doesn't want you to put that that she's entitled to it Midoraita, and doesn't want you to write Betulta, even though Rav Moshe was more relaxed about that. Rav Moshe Sternbach has also got a tshuva. Yes. Okay. So Rav Moshe Sternbach has got a tshuva on the subject, He thinks generally with non-frum kalot, you should always non-frum couples, you should always assume that she's not a betula, and you should write it appropriately that she's just an itata. He's also not terribly, he doesn't like you writing the Chazilichi Midoraita, but he's a bit more relaxed about that, because he says, in any event, that was sort of Tarte Mashma. It was unclear, what the Chazilichi Midoraita meant. Did it mean that you're entitled to this Minha Torah, i.e. that Ketubah, the Chiv of Ketubah is Midoraita, or did it just mean the Chazilichi, and you're getting Doraita, meaning Doraita money, rather than Drabanan money? So he's saying, seeing as you've got that ambiguity, it's not so terrible if you put it in. So, of course, this is Maisim Shebechol Yom, comes up all the time. Very often, certainly with nowadays 21st century, overwhelming majority of non-frum couples are actually living together before they get married. We're not talking about cases where you want to sort of gloss over something which is a bit embarrassing for the family, that the couple went on holiday together and you think they shared a hotel room, but they're living publicly together. They've got the mortgage and have been living in the house for 3 years before they get married. So it's Maisim Shebechol Yom. So I think generally the minhag is still to write, to follow Rav Moshe and to write a normal ketubah. Certainly here in the United Synagogue, the practice is that we always use a ketubah for a betula except in the case where the couple have either had a civil marriage already. If they've had the civil marriage already, so then, you know, it's public. You know, it's not only is it public, but it's also recorded that they're living together. You know, we're not talking about where they had the civil marriage, you know, 3 days before the chuppah, just for, you know, technical reasons. We're talking about, you know, where they had a civil marriage, you know, 6 months before, a year before, whatever, and they've been living together. So seeing as it's recorded, you know, in the other shtarot, you know, that they're married, so we'll record it here also, that she's married. The other case would be if she's got children already. You know, if she's got children, then clearly she's not a betula, and it would be a major theological problem to maintain that she's still a betula when she's got children. So what we, in those cases, the ketubah just misses out the word betula or betulta, and still gives martayim, but just misses out the word betulta. In all the other cases, it does say it. In terms of practical rabbinics, I remember years ago somebody saying that, you know, when he's studying Kiddushin in Israel, for a Chiloni couple who've been living together, you know, he certainly doesn't read it. When he reads out the Ketubah, he doesn't say the word Betulta, because there everybody can understand it, and they know that it's, you know, that it's a joke. So you don't want to bring, you know, halacha into disrepute in that way. You know, here, you know, most non-observant couples, and many observant couples as well, don't understand the wording of the ketubah in any event. Okay, so that was the second one. Yes. Okay, very important question. I was going to touch on this a bit later, but we'll touch on it now. We're going to move very quickly because I want to finish at 10 o'clock. But it's a good question. So what do? You find there's a mistake. So practical rabbinics is you always have a spare ketubah with you. And in actual fact, I always take to every wedding, I take three ketubot. First of all, I fill out the ketubah at home. If I possibly can, sometimes for whatever reason it's not possible, I try and fill out the ketubah at home before I go to the venue. Because you don't want to be sitting at the, at the venue being crowded by photographers and people, and if it's a frum wedding, the chazan dish, and somebody spilling whiskey over you while you're trying to fill it in. But in any case, you know, it's noisy. You know, you want to be able to, you know, focus on it. Then what I do once I've filled it in, I photocopy it, so that I've got another ketubah. So this means now, if the edim mess up, that I've got another ketubah I can just pull out immediately. It's all filled in. It just needs to be signed. Right? Then I can have a blank ketubah with as well, just in case the chatan says, you know, my name's not Shlomo Yaakov, it's Shimon Yehuda. You know, so then I can fill it in appropriately. But if you haven't got those options, so then you have to start tinkering with the ketubah. And tinkering with the ketubah is a massive nightmare and very difficult. Basically, what you have to do is let's say you've put it in the wrong month. Okay, you put in Tevet and it's actually Shvat. So you're going to have to cross out the word Tevet and write in Shvat. And then you're going to have to be mekayim that tikkun at the end. So after at the end of the ketubah, after the edim have signed, where the edim signed, you then need to write that we've corrected the ketubah in the first line, crossed out the word tevet, written in shavat, and then the edim have to sign that as well. It's not a simple business, because you can't just cross out a word in a shtar, you know, and just leave it as it is, because, you know, then, you know, the chatan's been mitchayev to a tosefet of $100,000, and you just cross out the words 1,000, and he's been mitchayev to $100. You know, there's a big difference there. So it's tricky, and you know, certainly if you come across that, You know, Baruch Hashem, we live in an era of mobile phones nowadays, which, you know, when I first started doing weddings, you know, you're stuck. You know, it's once you're under the chuppah, you're stuck. You know, and if you get into a problem, you're going to have to find a payphone somewhere and then try and get a hold of somebody. And it's, you know, you just have to think on your feet. Whereas now, if you really get, you know, I've had people, you know, phone me on occasion, you know, from the chatan's tish, you know, saying, hold on a minute, I've got a problem here. You know, what do we do? I, you know, I'm probably the fifth person they've called, but, you know, they didn't get through to the others. But at least they had a mobile phone with them and they were able to answer the question. Another question which comes up is the question of signing the ketubah. So very interesting shaila in again in Siach Nachum of Rab Nachum Rabinovich. The question is asked: Can the Edim sign in Laz? Can they sign in English if they want? So that's actually Mefurash in Shulchan Aruch in Choshen Mishpat that they can. You don't need to sign in Lashon HaKodesh. You don't need to sign in the same language even that it was written in. So I know that's in Evan Ezesim Kuflamet. And even if they're both signing in different languages, then that's also fine. Interesting question comes up, and this is what he really discusses. He says, it's all very well the Edim signing in another language, but they also need to be able to understand what they're signing. And this is a big problem. He said, you can't just sign a shtar not knowing what you're putting your signature to. You need to be able to read the shtar. So the Edim need to be able to read what's in the shtar and understand it. So this is a big issue very often at to chuppah. Now either something will just we need two frum people to sign the ketubah, but they might be amaratzim who can't understand what's written there, and even if they're not amaratzim, you know, they might arrange, you know, two friends of the chatan, they've been in yeshiva for a year or two. You know, good frum boys like learning, but they don't know that they don't understand what's written in the ketubah. Certainly not word for word. So there's a big shine about them signing the ketubah. So he says what you have to have is either you have to explain to them word for word everything that's written there, or you know you need to have a translation. He says often the ketubah has a translation there, but it's not a full translation. It's only a partial translation. I think on the United Synagogue Ketubah, it says on the back, the substance of the Ketubah, it's called. So he's flagging that up as an issue. Also, we should say that the Edim need to sign the Ketubah properly. So need the Chatchila, they need to write their name and their father's name. But the Avad, if they don't, if they just write their own name, and aid, so then that's kasha. So if they write, you know, Chaim Yaakov aid or Yaakov aid, that's good enough. But the chatchila, you know, it should have the name, further identification as well. And it also needs to be signed in a legible fashion. So again, on the hint of practical rabbinics, what I always do when I'm a Sunday Kiddushin and I don't know that, you know, haven't worked with those Edim before, I always take a piece of paper with, and before we sign the ketubah, I just get them to write their names on the piece of paper. I usually tell them, you know, just want to make sure for the spacing. It's not really, I want to make sure they know how to write their names. I've had cases where they don't know how to write their names properly. They don't know how to spell their names in Hebrew properly. So that's a problem. So it's best, you know, that's just in practical terms to get them to do that. If they don't know how to write in Hebrew, then I'd get them to sign in English. I have had, aid them sign in English. Often the case has been, they know how to, write their name in Hebrew, but, there's a spelling mistake or, they're not so used to writing their names in Hebrew. I just want to make sure they know that they know how to do it. If it turns out they really can't write their name in Hebrew, yeah, then get them to write in English. No, that shouldn't be necessary. Write their name, Charles Smith. That would be good enough. It's got aid there. It says aid. So that's good enough. It says aid. Okay. Want to finish off with the question of a lost ketubah. So there's a halakha that you're not allowed to live with your wife if you don't have a ketubah, and this is a very significant halachic issue. Now the question is, how exactly is it to be applied? So the Gemara in Masechet Ketubot Daf Nun Dalet says that Rabbi Meir says kol apochet livtulim imatayim la'amana mimana be'ilato be'ilat znut, that it's, if you don't have a proper ketubah, a proper hitchayvut there, then it's be'ilat znut. And the Gemara in Ketubot Nun Zayin says asul adam she'ishayet eshto afilu she'achat b'lo ketubah, you can't retain your wife even for a short period of time without a ketubah. And so this is Gemara in Ketubot Nun Zayin Amud Aleph. It's not on the page in front of you. I'm just giving you the reference there. So firstly, there's a machloket Rishonim and machloket between the Beit Yosef and the Rama with regard in Simon Samuch Vav with regard to what it actually means Asur Sheyishahet Ishto. Does it mean that you're not allowed, the Mechaber holds that you're not even allowed to have Yichud together, whereas the Rama holds that it means you're not allowed to have Bia together. But in any event, this is a significant problem. So it happens from time to time that a couple lose their ketubah. Not a couple lose their, the woman loses her ketubah. It's not their ketubah. It's the woman's ketubah. She loses her ketubah. In which case, a new ketubah needs to be written pretty much without delay. The question is, what if it can't be written immediately for whatever reason? Is there anything that one can do about it? So there are a number of ways of dealing with this. One possibility brought down in the Shulchan Aruch is that the husband can give her some sort of collateral to the value of the ketubah. So let's say the ketubah is worth, say, £30,000. So he can give her either a cheque to the value of £30,000, or he could give her his Rolls Royce, or whatever it is he's got parked in the front, and give that to her. And that's hers. It's not hers, but it's his, but she's keeping hold of it until another ketubah is written, just in case he decides to divorce her. That's one way of dealing with it. Another way of dealing with it is the question whether you can rely on the Eidim. In the fact that there were Eidim who can testify that he made this hitchayvut, that should be enough. In terms of all the point of the ketubah is that it's one of the reasons for the ketubah is to stop a person divorcing his wife in a hurry. He needs to know that if he divorces her, he's going to have to pay a lot of money. So to a certain degree, it doesn't matter whether he's got a shtar to that effect or hasn't got a shtar to that effect. So long as he's got to do that, that's going to slow him down. Now, of course, he might say, if I've got no shtar, then, who's going to know about it? Sorry, somebody had a question. What if the Eidim are dead? Okay, so then that wouldn't work. The third possibility is what happens very often nowadays is that there's a copy, a duplicate ketubah, which is kept by the Rabbanut. It's certainly what's done weddings in Israel and weddings in Chutz La'aretz as well. Some people aren't keen on it for reasons that I'll explain in a moment. But there's the question that when you've got the duplicate ketubah, as we call it, the Rabbanut, so maybe that's also, maybe that'll work in terms of there's a valid ketubah, it's being being kept somewhere. So there's a whole question about this duplicate ketubah. Some poskim aren't very happy about the whole notion of a duplicate ketubah. Why not? Because there's a halacha in Choshen Mishpat that you shouldn't have duplicate shtarot. Because if you've got duplicate shtarot, then people can come and claim on them twice. So it's never good to have duplicate shtarot. So that's point number one. So you shouldn't have it in the first place. In the second, right. Let's, for the sake of argument, say it's signed again. And this is what we generally do: is the edim sign the second ketubah. That doesn't always happen. I've seen, you know, in duplicate ketubah books, you know, they just sort of, you know, fill in the date and the names, you know, and that's it. Or maybe they even the edim sign, but in such a way that it's invalid because the whole middle of the ketubah hasn't been filled out. Question is, what's the point of this duplicate ketubah? Is the duplicate ketubah just for administrative purposes? So we've got something on record, and so that, you know, when the children come to get married, we can check up what the Hebrew name was and all this sort of thing. Or is it for halachic purposes that it's serving that in a case that the ketubah is lost, there's still a ketubah? So Rav Moshe Sternbach has got a couple of tshuvot on this topic. And it's a topic which comes up, but, you know, from time to time. Firstly, you can have people who lose their, you know, just lose their ketubah over the course of years. You know, it was filed away somewhere and they can't find it. Came up, there was a big discussion, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. There were the there were the fires in Israel, and a lot of yeshuvim had to be, a couple of yeshuvim had to be evacuated. I think they were even evacuated on a Friday night. And, you know, people's houses burnt down and everything. You had, you know, a lot of people, you know, a whole community, their houses were burnt down, everything they had was lost, including their ketubot. So could they remain with their wives? Surviving, could they remain living with them? Ashkenazim, could they be intimate with their wives, you know, before a new ketubah was written? And Rav Osher Weiss discusses in the tshuva, you know, what happened? You find out on a Friday night that you've lost your ketubah, you know, where you can't write another ketubah. So in any event, Rav Moshe Sternbach in Chelek Aleph, he says he's not so happy about it because it's true that there's another ketubah at the Beit Din, but he says if it's not really accessible, then does that really count? And he thinks that you know, it might not really count. You know, couple got married, you know, in America. You know, the ketubah's on record with the Beit Din in America. They've got made aliyah. You know, it's you know, to get hold of the ketubah would be a real business. So he doesn't think that it's good to rely on that. In Chelek Gimel, he's a little bit more accommodating as far as that's concerned, but he's not really keen on it. And at the end, I've got a tshuva from Rav Eliashiv or Piske Halacha from Rav Eliashiv, where in the seventh point there he says Chalila milismoch ala ketuba shniyalin yan isur shehiya va'asol asot kein sheim kein maxit shnei ketuvot. Yesh Zayin al Hayetek and Itzav and Ishlach Rabbanut Shezer Hatek Bilvat. So he says, what you've got to do is you've got to make clear that you can't have two ketubot. Because if you have two ketubot, then there's a machloket in the Achronim. Is it that just one of them's not valid, or is it that in actual fact neither of them are valid? So Rav Eliashiv was keen that you shouldn't, that if there is a copy of the ketubah, you want to make sure it's only functioning as a copy and not as a valid ketubah in any sense whatsoever. But certainly we do write a second ketubah, and then there's the question, you know, what to do in a case where short term, what to do if it's lost, and whether you can rely on the ketubah in the Rabbanut, at least short term. Okay, so that brings tonight to a close. And